Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from KVRF 89.5 Radio Free Palmer Studios here in the Matsu Valley. And on the line, we have writer, director, producer, and everything guy with Mush the Movie and MushTheMovie.com, a documentary about the Iditarod. His name is Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. And, you know, we had a very, very exciting end to the first part of the race, with Mitch Seavey coming in last night, and lots of things to talk about on the show today.
Well, we're looking forward to it. At this moment here, 7 o'clock Alaska time, we have 24 mushers into Nome, and what is it, 29 mushers to go, I believe is the correct number, if my math is correct. So moving right down the trail, the next mushers in should be Jessica Hendricks, Kelly Griffin, and Kurt Pirano. Real quickly, Alex, I just want to run down the top 10 mushers into Nome. Mitch Seavey, who finished last night at 10:39, and then followed shortly thereafter by Ali Zirkel, Jeff King, Dallas Seavey, Ray Reddington Jr., Nicholas Pettit, Yor Olsom, the first rookie in the bunch, Jake Berkowitz, Sonny Linder, and fan favorite Didi Genro. You know, before we get too far into this, we were talking off air about your prediction at 10:19 p.m. when Mitch Seavey was going to win, and you were only 20 minutes off. As I said last night, horseshoes and hand grenades are real close here. What in the world is up with your predictions?
You know, when I made the prediction, and I want to preface this by saying I'm notoriously bad at predictions, especially predictions for the Iditarod. But I made this prediction sometime last night, and it was based on how far Mitch and Allie were from White Mountain, an eight-hour rest in White Mountain, and then just a guess at how long it would take them to get to Nome from White Mountain. So I put those all together. And then I added in an extra hour because I figured, no, that can't possibly be right. So I was originally going to guess 9:19, but then I changed it to 10:19.
Well, you know, with predictions like that and your coverage here on Mushing Radio, it might be in order for somebody from Iditarod to give you a call and say, hey, we want you to work for Iditarod Insider next year.
Yeah, you know, I'm happy to take all calls like that.
Anything to get you up here to Alaska during Iditarod, for sure. So, Alex, we have a very busy show this evening. We only have 30 minutes since we're here at Radio Free Palmer, and they have programs that are backed up after us. Let's talk about last night and then lead into our topic of the evening. What is on your plate? What do you want to discuss tonight?
Well, you know, we had some very, very close finishes of the teams that have come in so far. Yor Olsom was only 16 seconds in front of Jake Berkowitz, so they were both running down Front Street at approximately the same time. Lance Mackey, right outside of Rome, was kind of dueling with Ramey Smith, and it looked like Ramey was pouring on the speed and was going to catch and pass Lance, but Lance ended up finishing just about 2.5 minutes in front of Ramey. So we've had some very, very close finishes so far.
You know, also, Alex, I was looking here at the standings, and within a couple of mushers or so, it looks like a musher has finished every hour since Mitch came in. That's pretty remarkable for the fans, at least. At least they can pretty much set their watches by when the next musher is going to be in. Okay, well, he's in at 10:05. I guess I can go have lunch and be back here in an hour and see the next guy come in.
Yeah, and that's just kind of indicative of what the race has been like. We even from the very beginning, we had a leader, and then we had a very, very large chase pack, and that's been the case pretty much from day one. So it's not surprising that at least in the first 24 hours after the finish, we're having mushers come in pretty regularly. And, you know, we've got Kelly Griffin is out of White Mountain, but we have a whole bunch of racers who will be teams that will be leaving White Mountain either late tonight or very early tomorrow morning. So I think we're going to see another fairly concentrated pack coming in sometime tomorrow afternoon to tomorrow evening.
You know, Alex, I was watching the coverage on KTUU, the NBC affiliate up here in Alaska, and I think only in Alaska and only for the Iditarod is Jay Leno interrupted for anything. But they cut away Jay and brought up the Iditarod coverage as Mitch was coming into town. And when he came into town, he looked utterly exhausted. He walked up to the front of the sled. It looked like he was just ready to pass out. And it reminded me of the video, and it's in your movie as well, of when Dick Mackey crossed the finish line. It looked like, you know, he passed out right there as they crossed. And I thought it could very well happen to Mitch, too. He looked very tired getting off the sled. And you probably saw a little bit longer coverage. What are your reports from what you saw of the finish last night?
You know, there's an expression in sports that you want to leave everything on the field. You don't want to have any extra amount of energy or effort that you don't put into the sport.
Right.
And I think we saw that in spades from both Mitch Stevie and Ali Zirkel. You know, we were talking off air just a little bit before, and it is remarkable to me that both of them ran a really almost flawless race. And although Ali made some progress when they left White Mountain and they were up in the hills, she kind of thought and knew that Mitch's team would be faster on the flats. And once they got down to the flats, he was able to lengthen his lead just a little bit. But we can't really point to anything that she did wrong that caused her to lose the race, or anything that Mitch did that was, you know, so masterful and so amazing that nobody ever possibly could have caught him. It was really very much the case for most of the race that we had teams that were just performing at the absolute top of their game and the absolute best that they could with their dogs. And, you know, certainly I think Ali Zirkel really wanted to win this race, and a lot of us were really rooting for her and wanted her to win. But I imagine that there's probably nothing, or certainly nothing big, that she can look back on and say, oh, if I had done this differently, I would have won.
You know, speaking of top of their game, it was reported, I did not see this, maybe you did, or maybe you heard it, when Mitch walked up to his lead dog, Tanner, he said something to him that I thought was pretty remarkable. He said, "That'll do," to his lead dog. That shows, you know, what he expected of his dog, and of course how well that dog performed. Remember, we talked about yesterday about single leaders, how Tanner on Mitch's team and then Quinto on Ali Zirkel's team, they were running in single lead, which is a pretty rare feat in of itself in modern mushing. Do you know anything else about what he had said to his lead dog? Maybe you saw that video a little bit longer than I did.
No, I just saw what you saw, but Mitch made some pretty great statements at the finish line. One of the things he said, and Mitch is 53, and I think a lot of people had been writing him off because he's older than the more dominant mushers, at least for the past few years. And he said, this is for all of the people who think that everything's done after 50, and you know, this is proof that you can still get it. You can still get it done when you're in your 50s. So, you know, that's certainly an encouraging thing for those of us who are getting older, which, as my friend Peter Dunlop-Scholl points out, is everybody.
Well, you know, Alex, you know what that means for you? That means you can still move to Alaska, get a dog team, and still run it before you're 70.
Yes. Yes, it does.
There you go.
You know, also, Mitch came up to Allie when Allie came in and said to her, "You're going to win this race more than once."
Wow.
And, you know, I thought that was a really wonderful show of respect from one very, very top contender to another.
You know, on Twitter last night, Danny Seavey, I guess this really shows what the family is like. You know, a lot of people will think about, you know, going out and having a beer or a drink after, you know, 9 or 10 days on the trail. I guess their tradition is to have milkshakes. I don't know what that tells about their partying atmosphere up in Nome, but the Seavey family has milkshakes.
Right, and apparently Danny, who came in at 1:20 in the morning, so a few hours after his dad, the first thing that he said when he came in, the first thing he said to someone was, "Did my dad win?" Because he had been out on the trail and had no idea what was going on with the teams in front of him.
Wow.
And then after he was told that his dad did in fact win, he said that if someone has to win besides him, he's glad that it was his father.
Very cool. And it's my understanding that that Dan was there as well, Mitch's father, Dallas's grandfather.
Yeah, I heard that. I didn't actually see him, but I heard that he was there as well. And of course, they all three ran the Iditarod last year.
Right. I was just going to mention that there was three generations out there on the trail last year. So I believe we can now firmly say that the Seavey family is a dynasty. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there are not many dynasties in the modern Iditarod. Certainly the Reddingtons, I think you'd have to call a dynasty, and the Mackey family with Rick Mackey and Dick Mackey and then, of course, Lance, all winning Iditarods. But I am hard-pressed to think of anyone else.
Right. I mean, we have, in the Seavey family, we have Danny, we have Dallas, we have Dan, and we have Mitch. And I'm sure in just this year or the year coming up, we'll have Conway as well. So four or five generations of Seaveys out there on the trail. That's pretty remarkable in a sport that's only 41 years old, in a race that's only 41 years old.
Right, and there's also Dallas's brother Tyrell has run the race and finished Iditarod, although he has not been mushing competitively for the past couple of years. So there's a pretty deep bench in the Seavey family.
I believe so, and I know Dallas just published a book sometime this year titled Born to Mush. I think he knows exactly what he's talking about. I mean, he got all of his tips from Mitch, and you know, Alex, when I had Mitch Seavey on during our coverage here on Mushing Radio earlier this year, I had asked him, I said, so when all of you guys are sitting down to Thanksgiving dinner, do you guys talk football or the Macy's Parade or anything like that, or do you guys talk about Iditarod? And he made a pretty good chuckle and he said, we talk about dogs.
Yeah.
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 So,
absolutely.
So I'm definitely going to upload that previous episode up on our Facebook page so people can listen to that interview. Lots of good commentary between Mitch and I that we recorded sometime earlier this fall. It'll be interesting for folks to hear that into perspective since we've talked about him so much on this show. So, okay, so now let's move on down the list a little bit. We had some big names finish right below Mitch and Allie. We're talking about Jeff King and Dallas and Ray and Dee Dee and Aaron and Ken and all the big names in mushing have pretty much finished the race already. Anything surprising? I know one in particular, Mr. Yor Olsom, put on one heck of a show.
Yeah, you're finished in seventh place. It was pretty clear early in the race that he was going to have a really wonderful and great finish. And it seemed for a while like he could even crack the top five, which he didn't quite do. But certainly this is a very, very great musher that is someone to watch in the years ahead. I'm also looking down the list of finishers, and Martin Boozer, who was so dominant in the early part of this race, finished in 17th, which is, you know, a perfectly respectable finish, but nothing compared to what it looked like he might do in the first third of the race.
Right, and I'm looking down the list as well. I think all of the big names in the sport have finished. We don't have anybody that's really lagging behind in terms of, you know, the who's who of mushing. All of those guys have finished. We're looking at John Baker, Ramey Smith, Lance Mackey, Jesse Royer, Paul Gephardt, Sim Smith. All of these perennial Iditarod finishers are already a gnome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, there's a few people who might be known to listeners of this broadcast and known to longtime race fans, and I'm thinking of people like Alan Moore and Jim Lanier. Neither of those are racers that were expected to have top 10 finishes. So Alan is currently in 34th and Jim's in 35th, which I think is about what we would expect from them. Alan is running the yearling team, the team that he had the victory with in the Yukon Quest is the team that Allie Zirkel took to Nome. So Alan is getting their dogs ready to be much more competitive in the next year or two or three.
So I just want to hit on this briefly, Alex, before we get into our featured musher this evening. I want to hit on 2 points. The first point is the prize money for first and second. You know, I'm surprised that it is so close. I know that there's a truck involved, but for first place, it was about $50,400. Second place for Allie Zirkel, it was $47,000 plus. Not a big difference between the two, is there?
No, not at all. I guess the big difference is the $40,000 truck.
Right.
And I don't know if you saw it, but when they did the presentation for the truck, they gave him a gigantic key that looked like it was bigger than most of his dogs.
No, I didn't get a chance to see that. My other point that I want to make, and since I'm a Siberian guy, I have several Siberians in my kennel at home, is Mike Ellis. He is set to break the purebred record, the Siberian Husky record when he gets into Nome relatively soon. He's already, I guess he's in White Mountain right now, but he's set to break that purebred record that was set by Blake Frecking just a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, now that, or at least this year, with Karen Ramstedt, who always runs a team of all Siberians, and she's not racing this year. She's one of the judges. So it's always good and it's always exciting to see a team that has predominantly or entirely Siberians.
Right, and for folks that know much about the history of mushing, a name by the name of Leonard Sepala ran a team of Siberians way back in the day, and that's where Togo came from. And of course, a lot of the Siberians that you see today go way back to those lines in the early part of last century.
Yeah, you know, I want to mention just real quickly while we're still on, that we did have one scratch this afternoon, which was Charlie Benya or Bejna, not sure how his name is pronounced, who was a rookie. He only had 7 dogs left, and he scratched outside of Unalakleet. So it seems as if he probably ran into some problems with his dogs and didn't have very much power and very many dogs left. And so he was forced to scratch late this afternoon.
And that's still a heck of a long way to go if you have to scratch in Unalakleet with only 7 dogs. You know, we mentioned that earlier in the broadcast, Alex, that you had to finish with 8 dogs. And I saw something today about Dallas only finishing with 7. Is the rule 8 or 6? Do you know?
I think it's 6. I would have to double check, but I think it's 6.
So maybe we'll find that out and talk about that a little bit tomorrow, because if Dallas can do it with 7, and I'm looking at the standings right now, it says dogs in with 7, so I guess you can finish with 7. It has to be 6. So, Alex, about 12 minutes left, a little bit less. Who are we talking about today? What is our featured musher?
Okay, so today we are talking about Cindy Galea, who is from Montana. She's 61 years old. She has run the race 10 times in the past. This is her 11th race. She has finished every time she's run except for the year 2000. Her best finish was 33rd in 2003. She's never finished in the money. We talked about this in an earlier broadcast. Every team that finishes will get $1,049 because of course, Alaska is the 49th state, and the official length of the Iditarod is 1,049 miles. But the top 30 teams finish what they call in the money, where they get additional money going from the first team, which gets $50,400, to, I believe, the 30th team gets somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,200 or $1,300. So Cindy took the last 2 years off, but she said that she missed it too much and wanted to come back and run in 2013. She first caught the mushing bug when she saw the finish of the 1998 race and started mushing when she was in her 40s. She lives in Montana, and she trains her dogs in warmer weather than most people who are in Alaska or in other much colder places, which this year was thought to perhaps give her a little bit of an advantage, but it doesn't seem to have turned out exactly that way. She says that she's very careful not to run the dogs when it gets much above 55 degrees, which probably seems unbelievably warm for most Alaskan mushers, who would think twice about running dogs when it's above 30 or 35. She, after the first time that she ran the Iditarod, she said that running any shorter distances, any shorter races, just completely lost its appeal. She loves the length of the Iditarod, the length between checkpoints, the time alone with your thoughts and your dogs. She, like a lot of Musher, she works full-time, and she trains her dogs and does runs between her nursing shifts and some overnights. She's a nurse practitioner. I don't know if I mentioned that, but if I didn't, there it is. And she told a reporter 2 years ago that one of the things she likes about it is that you and your dogs are alone, and you're far away from people, and you have lots of time to reflect on yourself and on life and what's really important, and all of your biggest weaknesses come right out and are staring you in the face when you're on the trail. She's also said that one of her favorite things about running Iditarod is watching dogs that she thought maybe were not as far along or as well developed rise to the occasion and really become mature and capable of much more than she ever thought that they were capable of. She said the one of the great things about Iditarod is that it builds toughness and resiliency, and it really helps you understand what you should be concentrating on in life. There are a number of top class mushers who've come from Montana, including Doug Swingley, who became the first person from a state other than Alaska to win the Iditarod. And there often are more mushers from Montana than from any other state besides Alaska. And she is a very matter-of-fact, down-to-earth woman, and she has talked about wanting to go back to school and get her doctorate and pursue holistic medicine, but then she said that she's not yet finished with the dogs and with running the dogs. Her son Jim also has run the Iditarod three times in 1999, 2002, and 2003. So one of the reasons that she wanted to move to where she lives in Montana is that they have a very well-developed trail system there, and a lot of people are surprised by how there are hundreds and hundreds of miles of trails in this little area in Montana, and it's for a lot of people who can't afford to or don't want to make the really big move and go up to Alaska, they wind up in Montana because it's a really great place to have dogs. She has a relatively small kennel, but I believe she has about 50 to 60 dogs.
That is definitely a mid-sized kennel, at least in my book. That's quite a few dogs to take care of, especially with that full-time job. You know, you mentioned that she was also one of the mushers that's that's involved with medicine. We've talked about that a lot during this year's broadcast. There's a heck of a lot of folks out there that are nurses or dentists or physicians or physician's assistants, et cetera. And you had mentioned, I believe, yesterday or the day before, it's because they have that that innate ability to care for their patients, and of course that's why they do very well with the dogs out there, because they have that healing mentality, so to speak. Can you clarify that or talk about that just a little bit here in our last few minutes?
Yeah, I think that is definitely the case. Obviously, there are a lot of, as with any field, there are a lot of bad doctors and nurses, but I think that the people who really can connect with their patients and really can really have that great bedside manner and that ability to really forge those bonds are people who tend to do very, very well with dogs. And my guess would be that it's probably an instinctive thing. It's something that you just have an ability to do, and that it can actually translate pretty well between species.
I totally agree with that, Alex, and I'm glad that that folks like Cindy and Christine Roloffs, I believe is how you pronounce her last name, and several other, Robert Bunsen, who unfortunately had to scratch, all of those fine medical folks are taking the time to be out on the trail with their dogs and do absolutely what they love to do. Alex, we just have a minute or two left. Tomorrow night is our last broadcast for 2013. It's our farewell show. We typically sum up everything that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks. What do you have on tap for the folks tomorrow night? You know, we've built up a heck of a fan base over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be a bit of a grab bag, and there's a lot of smaller topics that we didn't have a chance to talk about, so I know we're going to try to talk about all of those. If people have specific things that they would like us to talk about, please hit us up on Twitter or on Facebook, and we're happy to address anything that's on you guys' mind. I just want to mention real quickly that I'm taking pre-orders for the DVD release of Mush the Movie, and I'm doing a special. If you pre-order between now and when the Red Lantern team comes in to Nome, it's free shipping anywhere in the U.S.
You know, Alex, I know we have just about 1 minute left, 10 seconds. I know, Alex, I just watched that movie for the first time since the premiere last night. It was good to hear your voice and watch what you did with that movie. Congratulations on that. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Okay, thanks.
And this is Robert Forto on behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.